Hello and welcome to People in Profit. I'm Charles Pellegrin, and this week we look back at what's being called the 12-day war, pitting Israel against Iran with the assistance of the United States. The confrontation weighed on global markets, sending oil prices surging on the fear that oil supply could be heavily disrupted, with cascading effects then on inflation and growth. But those fears have been, at least temporarily, cast aside when a fragile ceasefire was announced by U.S. President Donald Trump. So, what happens now? Markets have taken the crisis on the chin and moved on, but a direct confrontation between Israel and Iran has taken place, something that had looked like a worst-case scenario just a few years ago. Well, to help us better understand all of this, we're joined by Dr. Jorge Leon. He is Senior Vice President and Head of Geopolitical Analysis at Rystad Energy. He's an energy economist. He's also previously worked at OPEC, the Organization for Petroleum Exporting Countries. Thank you for being with us.
Thank you for having me, Charles.
Well, at one point in this crisis, there was a real fear of seeing Iran trying to block the Strait of Hormuz, the narrow waterway which connects the Persian Gulf to the Arabian Sea and through which 20% of the world's oil transits. Take a listen to the EU's High Representative of the EU for Foreign Affairs, Kaya Kallas, speaking on Monday, June 23rd, after the U.S. decided to join the fray and bomb Iran's key nuclear infrastructure.
We are, of course, not only talking to United States, but also all the regional actors. And everybody's concerned of the same thing, which is the spillover effect that it has, security situation of the Middle East in a broader respect. Also, the question of retaliation and what kind of retaliation there is. We are sending clear messages also to Iran that it's not benefiting anybody, the escalation of this war. We are concerned of the closure of the Hormuz Strait because it has a huge impact also for the broader trade in the world. So it is a global issue, and that's why these are global concerns.
So, Dr. Jorge Leon, what's the likelihood of seeing the Strait of Hormuz blocked now in this new context?
I think the likelihood right now has diminished significantly, but the threat is always there. And one thing that I think is relevant to mention is that even though Iran has historically threatened to close the Strait of Hormuz, Iran has never done it, actually. Not even in the situation where there was the war with Iraq in the early 1980s. There has never been a real closure of the Strait of Hormuz, but the threat has been a constant issue in the energy markets in the last decades.
Can you give us just a sense of how important to global oil supply that strait is? I mentioned that 20% figure, but there's so much more to say.
Indeed, this is a very, very, very important choke point in the energy markets. As you correctly mentioned, 20% of the oil that the world consumes passes every day through the Strait of Hormuz. But it's not only oil. There's actually an implication for gas. 4% of the gas that is consumed in the world passes also through the Strait of Hormuz. So it's a very, very relevant point in the energy markets that trying to close it could have massive implications on oil and gas markets.
And even before this crisis happened, there were already difficulties for shipping vessels going through that strait. Tell us more about those difficulties.
Sure. There has been some disruptions in the shipping industry in recent years since the start of the current Middle East crisis that started on the 7th of October 2023 with the Hamas attacks. First of all, the Strait of Bab el-Mandeb in the Red Sea is now closed because of the Houthis attacks. So global trade had to reroute through the Cape of Good Hope. And at the same time, this new threats to the closure of the Strait of Hormuz comes on top of that initial disruption in the Bab el-Mandeb Strait. So yes, just the threat that Iran has put out there of maybe trying to close the Strait of Hormuz, just that had an impact of an increasing in the insurance costs, for example, for vessels crossing the strait. So it's not just the actual closure of the Strait of Hormuz. What we have seen is just the threat of it has made it more expensive for vessels to pass through the strait.
And if I'm correct, there were also hindrances to the vessels going through the Strait of Hormuz, notably with issues with the GPS systems in that particular part of the world, and smaller things that made it just more difficult to go through through the strait. I want to move on to a different a related topic. China is by far the biggest buyer of Iranian crude, even as Tehran faces economic sanctions from the U.S. that hinder its ability to export that oil. Tell us more about that relationship. Why does China continue to buy Iranian oil?
This is a very key relationship between Iran and China, and it has a spillover effect in the energy markets. As you correctly mentioned, 95% of the crude that Iran exports goes to China, and it does without a healthy discount rate. So that's why China is very keen on buying and keep buying Iranian crude. And also this important element played a role in the actual threat of trying to close the Strait of Hormuz. It would have not been economically viable for Iran to try to close the Strait of Hormuz, and by doing so, affecting its main trading partner as China.
This is perhaps anecdotal, but in the after the ceasefire, Donald Trump posted on social media, basically giving China a green light to continue to purchase oil from Iran, which seems to go against U.S. policy in acknowledging that China actually does that and is in a way circumventing sanctions. What's your reaction to that message?
I think here there are many things playing on the table, but one is extremely important. Is we shouldn't forget that the first day that President Trump took office, he declared the national energy emergency, and his number one objective was to lower the price of oil. And by allowing China to keep buying Iranian oil, that is a message to the market of bearishness in the market. Now, we think that Iran could rapidly ramp up production by around 300,000-400,000 barrels per day in the short term, and that is going to add to an already oversupply market in the oil market. So that is going to put downward pressure on prices, which goes very much in line with President Trump's main objective from the energy point of view.
Iran is part of OPEC, or OPEC Plus, if you include Russia. And after years of cutting output in order to prop up prices, that organization has decided now, since the start of the year, to start ramping up production. And this has led to oil prices falling significantly until this latest flashpoint. Saudi Arabia seemed to be the driving force in that move. But how would you define and describe Iran's position within the cartel?
Well, right now, Iran does not have official production targets. Iran is excluded from the voluntary and the official production targets. But the rest of the OPEC Plus countries have those voluntary targets and voluntary productions, and they're rapidly ramping up their production, unwinding those voluntary cuts faster than what initially energy and oil market analysts expected. So the big question is now that Iran might be able to increase production because China is allowed to buy Iranian crude. Where does that leave the rest of OPEC Plus? Will they further increase production? Maybe that would send prices lower, that is way too low. So the next few days and the next few weeks are going to be crucial to see how this new geopolitical picture plays into the OPEC Plus decision of unwinding and by how much the voluntary cuts.
Mm-hmm. Looking back at this 12-day war, one thing that comes out is the fact that key oil infrastructure was by and large spared. Why is that?
The fact that energy infrastructure was not massively targeted, it really shows that there is a geopolitical element behind the direction of the attacks, and trying to avoid energy spikes is important, especially now given the fragility of the global economy. Let's not forget that we just come out from a very high inflation period all around the world. And the last thing that we want, or the world wanted, was to have another spike of refueling inflation on the back of a higher oil price because of targeting energy infrastructure. And at the same time, we know that the state of the global economy is less is gloomier than what we thought a few months ago, particularly because of the global trade war that is happening. The IMF revised its growth estimates for this year from 3.2% to 2.8% just recently. And that is also another element that is playing around this idea of trying to avoid direct damaging of energy infrastructure, to avoid and refueling of inflation around the world.
The historical context for this, obviously, and this will be my last question, were the oil crisis of the 1970s when Western countries were suddenly faced with petroleum shortages, when Middle Eastern oil producers interrupted supply. But the world has changed a lot, and energy has changed a lot in all those years. What's the likelihood of seeing a 1970s-style global oil shock today?
I think it's very, very limited. As you correctly mentioned, the world is very different today compared to 1970. To start with, right now, the U.S. is the major oil producer in the world. In the 70s, it was not the case. Right now, there's a lot of electric vehicles. So consumption around the world, particularly in the developed world, has actually peaked and starts decreasing. So we rely, as a global economy, less on oil today than in 1970. And also, I think that particularly GCC countries and OPEC as an organization learned the hard way the lessons from the 1970s crisis, when OPEC was used more of a political entity as opposed to an economic entity. And since then, OPEC Plus has clearly deviated from taking an active political stand and focus more on the stability of energy markets. So from that point of view, I don't think that it's likely that we would see such a scenario repeating anytime soon.
Dr. Jorge Leon, you are Senior Vice President and Head of Geopolitical Analysis at Rystad Energy. Thank you for sharing your insights with us.
Thank you.
Well, that's all for this week. As usual, you can watch all of our previous episodes on the France 24 app or on the podcast platform of your choice. In the meantime, thank you for watching and stay tuned.